Welcome to Center for Excellence's podcast series, Expert-Led Practice. In this episode, we're going to be talking to Dr. Wendy Bunston, an associate lecturer from La Trobe University, on the subject of clients in their own right, how to listen to the voice of infants and children who have or are experiencing trauma such as family violence. Wendy will be taking us through the importance of understanding the voice of children and also how to apply the skills of an infant-led approach at a practice level. We'd like to say a big thank you to Wendy for spending some time with us and allowing us to interview her on this subject, and also to the Victorian DHHS and FSV for their continued support in this program.
So I'll start with the topic, which is clients in their own right, listening to the voice of infants and children who have or experienced trauma, such as family violence. And the first sort of point that you're asking me to speak to is, why do we need to listen to the voice of infants and children who had these experiences? And that's such a little question, and that's such a big question. It's such a little question because it's really speaking to the starting point for any work with an infant or child that directly impacts them is a starting point where they're entitled to be part of a process that includes them in that transaction. So for an infant and child to be part of a family services program, to be part of child protection, to be part of the children's court, all of these places exist because there are infants and children in the first place. But often their voice is either maybe not ignored, but they're not seen to have a voice. They're not seen to be able to offer anything about their experience. So from my perspective, the big question here is around, how do we do things differently as a sector? How do we create space for infants and children, particularly those who are nonverbal, to have the opportunity to be part of that experience, part of that service delivery in a way that is therapeutically respectful of them? We have lots of things that we put in place to obstruct that from happening. Things like, we'll traumatise them further if we bring them into the space where we're talking to their parents about family violence, that they're unable to offer us anything of their experience. I don't think as many people would say that these days, at least amongst professionals, but that infants don't remember, or if things happen really early, they can't access that memory. What we know now from the scientific evidence is that infants and children physiologically hold those memories in their body, that they express those memories through the way that they operate within relationships, how they operate when they first meet strange people, how they operate when they meet people that might trigger associations for them. And all of these things are happening not at a verbal or left brain intellectual level, cognitive level. These are happening at a physiological level where fundamentally children are very hardwired and very attuned to their environment. So they're very much on the lookout when they're coming into services to seek out those things that feel dangerous to them. So coming into a service that is not attuned to, does not make the infant feel comfortable, does not create a space that is welcoming, that does not recognise that perhaps we need to introduce ourselves to the infant in a gentle way, to use their name, to look at them, to include them in part of the discussion, to acknowledge or recognise that even though the infant they won't know the meaning of words at an intellectual level, they will know the meaning of words at an emotional level. So they will understand a voice that is calm and soothing and empathic, and they will understand a voice that is functional, that is dismissive, that is high-pitched. Infants are the scientists in the crib who are constantly sussing out their environment to find out what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe. And if they find places that don't feel safe, they will withdraw into themselves or they will protest in some way. So our ability as practitioners, going back to the big question and answer for this one, is we have to radically change the way we do our practice to, one, respectfully cater for the right of the infant to be involved, as I said, in those processes that directly impact them, and two, to think about what it is that the infant brings into this space, to think about the healing that infants bring into a space where they're possibly the least traumatized person in the family system, so most flexible and available to change, most flexible and available to engagement. And sometimes as a sector, we will have the experience of working with adults who are incredibly traumatized, incredibly defensive, very closed, very suspicious. And our capacity to engage the infant or child can sometimes be the port of entry for engagement, in a way that trying to engage with an adult who's had lots of very poor experiences of professionals isn't going to work. And there are also ports of entry around the hope that they hold for families. So even for the parent who was violent, that there are many parents who have a desire for their infant or their child to have a different future to what they've had, that have a desire to think forward into the future and think about the possibility of having an ongoing relationship with this little person. And when you talk about their experiences with their parents when they were little people, you can often hear incredibly sad, distressing, traumatic stories. When you ask about their relationships now as adults with their parents, if they're still around, you can still hear quite traumatic and distressing and sad stories. So if you look at the pasts of parents and think about their present now and what motivates them for change, and you think towards their future, many of these parents want to have a relationship with their child that they've never had themselves with their parents. So that's another reason why infants and children are such a powerful way to access the system and to access motivation for change. And fundamentally, if we don't see, hear, think about, reflect on the experience of the infant, we can leave them in untenable and incredibly unsafe situations. So sometimes we don't think about infants and children who remain in very distressing situations because it's too confronting, or we feel hopeless that, oh, well, who's going to do anything about it anyway? If we make a notification, it's likely that, you know, child protection won't open up a file. All sorts of experiences that we have in a sector that sometimes we feel lets us down. So it's easier sometimes not to go to that space. And as a result, we leave children in invidious situations, which later on, by the time we act, sometimes the damage has largely been done. So I think that sort of responds to the first question of why it's important to listen to the voice of infants and children. I guess that the sort of second segment here is how. How do we listen to them? How can practitioners listen to the voice of infants and children who have or are experiencing family violence? So for me, how we listen to the voice of infants is to immediately bring them into the space when we're working with families, to immediately bring them into the mind of the families we're working with. And when I say that, I'm talking about if we're working with a family who have infants, young children, to meet those infants and young children, to talk to those infants and young children, to observe what is the dynamic you see operating between them and their parents, to take notice of the way that the infant or child physically holds themselves in the space with their parents and in the space with others, with professionals, with strangers, to be able to think about if a young child meets me for the first time, say a two-year-old meets me for the first time and comes and plops themselves in my lap, what do I make of that? Do I make of that that what a friendly, outgoing little child? Or do I wonder, is that what a two-year-old would do with a strange person? And maybe wondering, and hopefully in places like reflective supervision, but being able to sort of think through, what might that be about? What might that child be telling me? My experience in running groups with babies and mothers and babies and fathers is that infants and children who will more quickly come to someone they don't know than to their parents is often letting you know that you might be a safer bet than their parents are. And that's something to think about and take note of. If you have an infant or child that is described as being incredibly, a really good baby, a baby that, you know, sleeps all the time, doesn't make a lot of fuss, you've got to wonder, is that baby okay? Babies are sort of built to make fuss. They're built to engage with the world. They're built to protest. They're built to seek out safety with their caregiving environment. And when they feel safe, they're sort of built to sort of say, right, I'm hungry now, or it's cold in here, so can you do something about it? You know, babies are built to communicate with their environment. If a baby isn't doing that, if the baby isn't letting their external world know I'm feeling hungry or sleepy or tired or frightened or sad or happy or playful, then what's going on in that environment? And that's not about quickly jumping to a judgment, oh, terrible things are happening, but it's keeping a curious and questioning mind and being reflective about, if I was that infant, how would I find this environment? How would I experience this world if I put myself in the booties of this baby? It's being open to sort of not relying on language, which is what we tend to do as professionals, but that we privilege the people that are verbal. Even we would privilege older children that are verbal over younger children, and see they have legitimacy in the sort of point of view that they're expressing. When infants and young children let us know through their behaviour that might be dysregulated, it might be through aggression or disorganised sort of indicators that don't quite make sense, that they can from one moment be very calm and passive and then something can happen that triggers them and it's like, what was going on then? What happened in this space to cause that reaction in this little one that didn't seem to be in keeping with what was happening in the environment? So it's about us, again, changing. It's about not the infant or child doing things differently. It's about us as workers being open to the space in a different way. And we can't do that if we don't meet children, if we don't bring them into the space, if we don't see them, which is sometimes what happens in this sector, that there are children there, but we don't actually see them. So what are the necessary sort of skills for being able to do this? I think it's the ability to be observant and to think about what you're seeing. It is really important to have access to reflective supervision. It's important for workers to take an interest, I think, in what is a really rich literature and area of expertise, infant mental health. And it's not saying that infant mental health is expert on family violence, because in some ways they've been slow to come to the party on this one. So in some ways there isn't probably as much space in the infant mental health world as there should be around responding to family violence. So there is a great deal that the family violence sector can teach the infant mental health sector, but there's also an enormous amount that infant mental health can teach the family violence sector. And fundamentally that sort of resonates with, there's an enormous amount that infants and children can teach us about their world and about their experiences. The what, so we've done the why, we've done the how. So the what is, what additional supports or approaches can you recommend for practitioners wanting to improve their practice when working with infants and children? I guess one of the basic things that I found most revelatory in my training as an infant mental health worker was doing infant observation. And I'm aware that not everybody will have the opportunity to formally take part in infant observation training, which is sort of a year-long process. But it doesn't mean that we can't be observant about what's happening in front of us and make space to diligently every now and again try and capture in a process notes or even a recording after we have a session of just minutely going through everything we saw and being able to then go back and reflect on what did that tell me in that space. And I think for me, even though I used to, you know, hate doing my infant obs because it took me so long to type up my sessions. It took me about 4 hours of an hour's observation. And that's what I ended up using for my PhD data collection. It is such a discipline. It really taught me how to shut my mouth and watch with my eyes and to listen with my ears and, I guess, in some ways, with my head and my heart to feel what was happening in the space, to be really empathically engaged with that space and to be really present in the moment. And I don't think that you necessarily have to do a year of training to learn that, but I do think it takes a little bit of work. It takes some discipline. And you then have a look at what did I learn from that process? What did I learn from that infant? So I think that's a really good starting point. I think it would be great to see more meshing between the infant mental health field and the family violence field. You know, we have a very vibrant infant mental health community in Australia. Every state has an infant mental health organisation branch. There's lots of things that the infant mental health space offers. Connecting with early childhood, like perhaps it's a greater marriage between, and maternal child health nurses who I think do an exceptional job and are real frontline workers. So I guess it's back to that old mantra that we often say is about collaborating with others in the field who can teach us things. I certainly have had the great pleasure and honour to work in group work space with therapeutic spaces with maternal child health nurses, with OTs, with speech therapists, and all of them have taught me something different about that space. So I guess it is working in a collegial and collaborative way. But the biggest people we have to work with collegially and collaboratively is with the infants and children themselves. So I think that's a really good starting point.